From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Paris Alston. Welcome to Consider This from Boston, where Black and brown teachers often pay what's called the invisible tax. That is, dealing with the extra burden of systemic racism in their schools, which takes a mental and emotional toll and can lead to burnout. GBH education reporter Meg Woolhouse has been digging into this, and she joins us now. Hey, Meg, how's it going?
Hey, Paris, nice to be with you.
So as we've said, this tax is invisible, but how is it paid?
Well, I spoke to a number of different teachers in the Boston area who have experience with this, and they say it shows up in a lot of different ways, like every time a brown or black teacher is asked to discipline a student of color, because it's just assumed that they're better able to communicate with that student. Or there might be an expectation that they'll prepare students for the racism they experience outside of school. However you describe it, it's that extra load, that extra burden that they're expected to pick up simply because they're people of color. Now, there are no hard numbers on how many of the country's teachers of color have left during the pandemic, but anecdotally, many teachers I spoke to said they felt overburdened by the slow pace of systemic change and just a general lack of support, and that's why some are leaving.
And you spoke with one teacher in particular whose name is Katie Castor, and she's a clear example of this.
Yes, Katie Castor was a teacher in Boston Public Schools until last year. Here she is talking about how that tax affected her.
Black teachers often talk about a black tax, and I think for being Latinx, Latina, there's a sense of a brown tax. And this brown tax is the extra, I would call the extra responsibilities or the extra expectations that are often put on teachers of color.
And I imagine the pandemic didn't make things any easier.
That's right. Like all things pandemic, it made a tough situation worse. And the racial reckoning of the nation also has had a tremendous effect on teachers of color who want to help their students make sense of the world around them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Castor was deeply invested in the South Boston school where she worked, and she was aware of her influence on students of color, too. She organized activities, like a group specifically for girls of color to connect and bond. And she says she always went that extra mile for her students. So, you know, it really stung when her medical request to teach from home during the pandemic, because she's immunocompromised, was denied. When she saw some teachers win approval to teach remotely, Castor called it quits after 14 years in the classroom. Here she is again.
I had also done so much for them, whether it was helping with curriculum and, you know, just leading groups at my school and, you know, doing all these things. But then when it came down to it, there was just a feeling of, no, you know, we need you in the classroom. We need to, you know, just show up for work. And that was just, it was almost like a slap in the face.
Ooh, yeah, that sure does sound like it. And Meg, we always hear about the need for more teachers of color in schools so that students are educated by people who look like them, right? But would that help or hurt this problem of burnout?
Well, it seems like it could definitely help. When you're the only teacher of color in a school or part of a very small group, there's a sense of isolation and this feeling that it was up to them to help students reckon with racism or police violence. And, you know, the numbers are stark overall. 40% of students in Massachusetts are non-white, but just 14% of teachers are. That's according to Wheelock Educational Policy Center at Boston University. And here's the heart of the problem. You know, if it's been proven again and again that student educational outcomes improve when students see teachers who look like them, you know, where do we stand now? There have been programs and grants around for decades to address the shortage, but those solutions have only nipped around the edges.
And is there anything being done from a policy standpoint?
Well, there is state legislation right now in an attempt to address this, and that's something to watch. But the real problem is you can have black and brown kids right now in Massachusetts who can go through their entire school careers without having a single educator of color.
All right, that's Meg Woolhouse, GBH reporter covering K-12 education. Thanks for bringing us this story, Meg.
Thank you.
Before we go, I should tell you what else is up. The city of Boston is continuing to pull down the encampment in the area known as Mass and Cass. The intersection of Melnia Cass Boulevard and Mass Ave in the city's south end has become the center of Boston's substance abuse and homelessness crisis. The Boston Public Health Commission gave notice to some people living in the encampment on Friday that they had 48 hours to leave. Boston City Councilor and mayoral candidate Michelle Wu supports the plan to get residents out of the encampment.
Right now, the focus is on connecting every single person with services. And I know our partners across city, county, state government are working in coordination here.
Wu's opponent in the mayoral race, fellow city councilor Anissa Asaibi George, has also backed the plan to rehouse the residents. But some public health experts and advocates are against the move, saying that displacing people at Mass and Cass will only make things worse. In other news, some Massachusetts cities are loosening their mask restrictions as COVID numbers in the state drop. But the city of Worcester is not following that trend. Dr. Michael Hirsch is the medical director for Worcester's Division of Public Health.
The CDC defines our region as a red zone so that the level of transmission is still very high. That's why we haven't done anything to rescind those orders.
And finally, iconic Red Sox television broadcaster Jerry Remy has died. Remy had been fighting lung cancer on and off since 2008. Before joining the Sox broadcast team in 1988, he spent seven seasons as the team's second baseman. Remy's later years were clouded by controversy. He faced criticism after his son Jared murdered his girlfriend in 2013, with some saying that Remy had enabled his son's criminality. Red Sox shortstop Xander Bogaerts said of Remy, quote, "You knew he loved the Red Sox and that he was always pulling for us. He will be missed." Jerry Remy was 68 years old. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo since baseball legends and legendary voices, I'm Paris Alston. Be well. Another show here at WBUR that's very dear to my heart. And why is that, you ask? Well, because I used to work on it. That show is WBUR's Radio Boston, our local daily news magazine, and it's another way to get a whole bunch of information about what's happening in our city and our region every day. Just search for Radio Boston in your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe.